You are listening to a Student Radio Association podcast.
Hi there, my name is Fedra Floro, and my role in Raven Tales was arranging auditions for main characters, casting, and booking recording dates. For me, working with the actors and witnessing their debuts and development in radio drama has been inspiring and very entertaining. Here are some of their thoughts on voice acting.
Hi, I'm Seb.
Hello, I'm Anaya.
Hi, I'm Marcus.
So I'm Flora.
My name's Brian Murray.
I'm Jemima McLean.
Hi, we're the cast of Our Little Village.
Our university doesn't have drama degrees, which is why it's so great that we had Fedra helping to be this contact for Raven Tales and URB and the theatre groups which we do have at the university. So Bust, which does theatre, Bosoms, which does musicals, Quips, which do comedy.
So at university, I was a member of the Student Theatre Society, and as a first year, I just wanted to try out every single thing I could. But I'd never really tried radio, and I was really, really excited about trying it. So a lot of my friends got involved, and this audition for Crow came along, and it was like a paranormal investigator story. And it was one of those stories like that I'd always wanted to be a part of. Like, it was so interesting and unique. So I thought I'd just go for it, just on the off chance. And then I got Crow, which is amazing.
Why is everything so dusty?
That's not dust. This is where the library stood.
What happened here?
When she struck, we had to burn a few things. Things that she should never be allowed to read. There wasn't much time.
Why?
Because we knew she'd kill us.
I remember walking in and seeing the script and immediately being attracted to the part of the disembodied voice on the end of the phone, and was fortunate enough to get cast in it. And yeah, been working with Raven Tales sort of on and off ever since.
Acting in radio is so different to anything that I've ever done before. So I'm really used to working in theatres and acting in theatres where you have a script for months and months usually, and you have weeks or months of rehearsals, and you know exactly what you're doing, and you have this time to kind of develop a character. Whereas with radio, it's so much quicker.
In theatre, you kind of, it's all about like reactions. So you look at the audience reaction, you look at the reactions of your other actors, you kind of try and work out the scene. You have to really spontaneously produce this thing based on everything that's going on around you. Whereas with radio, you don't get that. It's all like, there's no immediate feedback. Yes, the actor is with you in the room, but you're concentrating on how your voice sounds. It's very, very specific.
You have to portray a similar sort of emotional range with much greater constraint, because of course it's all in the voice.
It's a wholly different experience, but it's somewhat freeing to be able to sort of imagine the situation that you're in, like as if you're reading a book.
I do remember one scene where I think I had to do a bit of shouting and kind of had to step back from the mic.
The impudence.
But you are horses. Talking horses, I'm not imagining this.
We are not just any typical mares. I am Lord Lyndhurst, leader of the new forest ponies, guardians and educators of this sacred land. I am the magical guardian of the flowers.
The magic forest. It seems that humans are no longer existent, and the new forest is inhabited by creatures that can talk and have their own society, and there's some wondrous characters in it.
So, welcome to the aviary. Impressive, eh?
It's a bit noisy.
Yeah, thousands of birds seek refuge in this tower every night. Just be grateful we're not on the bottom floor.
Why? Oh, yuck!
That's why.
You kind of do need to know in advance what your character is going through and what they're feeling, and just, I don't know, I guess just express a lot of emotion through your voice and really just go for it.
Obviously, when we've got a lot of new acts in the studio, we try to make it as comfortable for them as possible, so we ensure we've got the scripts out ready for them, we know exactly how the space is going to be used, and of course, we do icebreakers. We do a lot of crowd sound recordings before we go into the actual dramas themselves. So, crowd panic, crowd disapproval, and our personal favourite, zombies.
getting maybe 15 actors in a studio around a microphone saying, scream like you're in awful pain, and all of us looking at each other going, it's an experience like no other.
If you think coordinating actors in a studio for a scripted drama is tough, just wait till you get to improv.
Our Little Village is a very simple role-playing game where up to five people, they will take on the roles of different people in a small fictional village that we'll come up with. And the roles normally coming from a deck of cards, so drawn randomly. And then, yeah, we'll all sort of take turns to go around telling us about life in the village and all our relationships. And then by the last round, we all die. You know, simple games like that, you know. In most games,
keeping it light, really.
Yeah.
Family-friendly,
nice. Definitely. Nice and cheerful.
It's like Cluedo.
Except you know
except
how...
everyone's the murderer. Yeah.
Everyone's the murderer, everybody else dies, you know.
So that writer hasn't called for like 3 days now, and it is not on. I feel like I've been used. And let me tell you another thing. I walked past the bookshop in town, and there it was. On the bookshelf, a picture of me on the front cover of a book written by... him, whatever his name was. He was using a pseudonym that I can't remember what it was at this point. But I was too enraged. I remember the name of the book, though. That maid that came over that one time.
So I was going to say, I like definitely at the start felt very much like, oh my God, I don't want to do it. I hate improv. And I've got into it and I'm like, I don't want to stop doing it. And I'm graduating and I'm really sad that I'm not going to be able to carry on with it.
It's like with a group of friends, so it's not as intimidating.
It is good. Like, right, I've used a couple of jokes from this in stand-ups that worked. It is a nice writing, being in a fantasy world is somehow helps.
It's when you hear it back and you go like, oh no, I said that, didn't I? And then it doesn't come up because it was edited out, and you're like, oh, thank goodness.
My mum's yes. listening to this.
Just yesterday I heard a squirrel talking. A squirrel! They don't even have large brains! It doesn't make sense, but it's happening.
If you're thinking about trying voice acting, just do it. I would always recommend trying out something that you're not sure of, because I thought it was going to be terrible at voice acting.
It does seem to work out quite well when you do put in a bit more, that just extra effort, so that it's not too monotone.
Don't worry about not getting it right the first time. It's actually quite a good bit of advice. And, you know, you start kind of getting maybe a bit worked out because you're like, oh, well, you know, we have to start this recording again if I mess this up. And then you kind of start worrying about things. If you just kind of approach it and just go, okay, cool.
With voice acting, there's this temptation to read the script as if you were sort of reading aloud to a classroom, which is really problematic when you're trying to emote through it.
Work on your impressions and, you know, don't be afraid to experiment with different sorts of sounds and different voices, but consistency is the thing. And listen to your recording engineer. I think that's the main thing. They know what they're talking about. If they say shout, if they say be quiet, if they say, you know, be clear, don't worry about it, I'll do it in post. Don't worry about it, you're not on stage.
So I would say for anybody, it's so beneficial, and especially for actors, it makes you so self-aware. You have to think about everything that you're doing. So I would definitely say that it's one of the most beneficial experiences I've had as an actor.
That was a selection of our actors talking about their experiences of starting radio drama and comedy. After the break, Darius and our composer, Adam Jackson, will take you through editing music and sound design.
I'm on the rocky road, heading down off the mountain slope, and as my steps echo, echo louder than before, another day is done, say goodbye to the setting sun, see what I found, back to the ground, just like before. And hey, 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 beautiful day.
Hey,
hey, beautiful day. Hey, 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 wonderful day. When the
And welcome back to this SRA podcast about getting started with student radio drama and comedy, recorded here at URB in Bath. We're going to assume that you have recorded your project, and it's now up to you to mix in some music and some sound effects. Here at Raven Tales, I often work with a composer who makes some original music for our drama series. His name's Adam Jackson, and I'm going to pass over to him now to chat about his process.
They shut the road through the woods 70 years ago. Weather and rain haven't done it again. And now you would never know. There was once a road through the woods before they planted the trees. It is underneath the coppice and heath and the thin anemones. Only the keeper sees that which the ringdove broods and the badgers roll at ease. There was once a road through the woods.
I'm Adam Jackson, and I've been doing bits and pieces for Bath Student Media for a few years. In particular, original music and sound effects of spoken word stuff. There are some big advantages to producing an original score for your show. It can really simplify the issues of copyright and attribution, but it can also add a huge artistic dimension to a show, so you can have recurring motifs or you can really dial in a particular mood or technology level. One thing that really grates on me as a musician is if you have a badly timed edit or a really awkward fade out on a piece of music, so it's fantastic for a producer to be able to go back to the musicians and say, can I have a 20-second version of that for this scene or something? And the result can be way more professional. It's fine to, like, you can provide examples of tracks that have the feel or style or arrangement that you're after. And the other thing that a composer wants to get is some kind of length target. When it comes to actually figuring out a style for a project, I like to have some kind of consistency in terms of how much I'm using amplified instruments like electric guitar, how much I'm using acoustic instruments like flutes or recorders, and how much I'm using electronic stuff like synthesizers and messing up samples. So, for example, in The Magic Forest, I mostly used acoustic instruments for the tunes, so like I used acoustic guitars and things, and then I used electronics for more subtle ambient sounds. So that created a sense of something that was natural on the surface but had hints of other stuff going on.
There's so many of them! Why didn't you tell me about this before now?
Venner, I'm sorry, but can it wait?
Sure, apologize later. I'm afraid we're going to jump down this cliff ledge.
What? I can't possibly do that.
But I can. Hold on to me. One, two, three! Ow!
Oh, my head, my legs, my everything.
When I personally make music for the sake of making music, it tends to be quite complex, a lot of structure. Whereas for soundtrack work, you generally actually want it to be a bit simpler. There's usually something else going on at the same time, so you want to think about making something which, you know, it might be turned down for speech to run over the top of it, say. If your music's too noisy, then it's going to get mixed low if they've got speech running at the same time, and the result is that no one hears it, or that the only effect it will have is to slightly irritate people who are trying to hear the words. So it's worth thinking about how things are actually going to work in context. From a production standpoint, by the way, a really good tip if you do have a busy piece of music and you're trying to layer speech over it, is instead of just turning down the music, use something like a low-pass filter or an EQ and reduce the high frequencies. That's where a lot of the clarity of speech comes out, and then what you can end up with is a piece of music that sounds like it's kind of coming through the walls of another room or something. If you don't have a friendly neighbourhood composer, there are some other options. I'd look at places that use the Creative Commons licenses where possible, so things like Jamendo and Bandcamp make it quite clear what licensed music's under. There's a few different versions of Creative Commons licenses, and some of them have this non-commercial requirement. There's a bit of controversy over that one, because the wording's a bit vague and it hasn't been, like, properly legally tested yet. So musicians are a bit wary because they don't know if it'll actually protect them from being exploited. And then producers aren't sure what actually counts as commercial. Like, if I put something on my website, is that okay? What if the website has an ad on it? What if I use it in a portfolio? So the safest thing is to go with stuff that's either got the CC0, which means basically do what you like, or the attribution-only licenses, CC BY, which just means that you need to credit them. And then everyone knows the deal and it's easy. I'll give you a few production tips which apply equally to music and speech, I'd say. So first of all, get to know the basic tools well. So you need to know about EQ, compression, limiting, gating, delay, and reverb. Those are your bread and butter. Most sort of audio software environments will have a bunch of pre-made settings for these tools. People call them presets. It's basically always wrong to just use a preset, because that will have been dialed in for something that isn't your source material, and some of the parameters are more sensitive than others. So what presets are great for is like a way of learning how to use the tool and learning what it can do. So go through the presets that you like and ones that you find interesting and figure out how they work. It's like, just make small adjustments, see how those affect it. Try to stay away from the more complicated effects like multiband compressors. It's much more difficult to understand what your changes are doing with those things. It's a good idea when you're doing a recording or mixing session to switch around a bit between speakers and headphones, and also try listening back at a few different volume levels. It's a classic industry and studio trick that basically anything sounds better when it's louder. So it's really easy to actually fool yourself with that and think that the effect that you've done made something better, and actually all you've done is really turn it up.
Adam Jackson there, our composer of original music for our student radio drama and comedy projects. When it comes to trying to come up with sound effects for a project, you've always got the choice of whether you are going to create them yourselves, what's called Foley, or whether you're going to source them elsewhere. Adam earlier mentioned some sites for music. For sound effects, quite a good one is freesound.org. It's one we use quite a lot here, but if you are, of course, sourcing sound effects, you do need to make sure that they have the right type of reverb on them and the right stereo panning on them to match your actual recording. So there you have it. We've looked at the Raven Tales process for making a student radio drama or comedy project. After the break, I'll talk a bit more about organising a production group, and we'll wrap up hearing from all of our contributors about what they want from a producer.
Riding on the wall. And welcome to the final part of this podcast about getting started with student radio, drama and comedy. We've now looked at writing and picking the best stories, considering microphones and what the different directional settings offer, working with voice actors, and considering music and sound effects. A preliminary look, because of course, there's always more you can learn the more you get involved with it. So in this final section, I'll just quickly go over some bits of advice for people who want to try organising a drama production group that makes multiple projects. Start small. If it's your first try at a drama or comedy, then I'd suggest you actually start with an audiobook or a monologue or a very short story and then work up to more complex stuff. So at Raven Tales, for example, we began with two short Halloween stories 3 years ago, and then we did audiobooks to get more people into the studios. Now we tend to do our simpler projects in the first half of the academic year, and then work up to doing a series in the second half of each year. For a better idea of what you can do, listen to what's already out there on BBC Radio 4 and 4 Extra, across student radio, and also to great podcasts like Welcome to Night Vale and Wooden Overcoats. Listen to them and take notes on what it is you like in the projects and how you think they were made. If you have limited technology or very few script writers, then don't think that will stop you from being able to make stuff. Improvise and get creative with your storytelling. So for example, one of the big technical limitations we had 1 year was that URB's main studio was undergoing maintenance, so we recorded one of our projects, a superhero documentary, with an old H1 Zoom microphone. The final comedy drama, Powers That Be, sounded like a real mockumentary because it had been recorded on that Zoom microphone. Plan a schedule of your projects and who the contributors are so you know who's working on these, so when you're writing the continuity and the credits, you don't forget anyone. And also so that you're not releasing a ton of stuff in 1 week and then having a dry spell for several months. Even if your role leading the group isn't majorly tech-oriented because you don't think you're that kind of person, it doesn't hurt to brush up on the basics. There are some very helpful bits of guidance out there on YouTube, people like Mike Russell who chat you through the basics of editing and working with things such as reverb, so check them out and brush up on your skills. Don't think you need to produce everything alone. There's a reason why I've worked with Fedra with coordinating our actors across our projects and Adam on music and sound design, because otherwise you give yourself way too much to do when you're at university and there are other people who want to get involved. Always try to bring in new people and be passionate about what it is you're making and working on. Be passionate about the script somebody sent you. Be passionate about what these guys are making with music and sound effects and how the actors are bringing new things into the story. Because if you're passionate about it, then it's easier for other people to be too.
I think the most valuable thing is that they like the script and they're enthusiastic about it. And also that they have a lot of ideas.
A producer is equally capable of putting their mark on the production as an actor or a writer is. Be bold, but also to believe in your actors as well.
To producers who are working with actors, you've all got the patience of a saint.
We're terrible!
For new actors, give them some time getting used to the microphone. And maybe a run-through of etiquette and, you know, certain rules and enunciation and clarity. It's things which are sometimes overlooked in theatre and on stage.
If you don't quite get it right, you can re-record things and you can do things again and play around with them.
The people you hire to read for you will surprise you in what they come up with and the fresh takes that they sort of bring to the table.
But at the same time, if they're not doing it quite as you imagined it or pictured the character to be, don't be afraid to just sort of tell them, like give them some other ideas, because sometimes... Like, as a producer, you do know what's best for the series and how it would all flow in together.
What works really well for me, composing-wise, is to have a good brief. It's the difference between looking at a blank piece of paper and being asked to draw a boat, say. I have way less problems with writer's block if I'm making things for podcasts than I do when I'm actually making my own music.
So it's just about, like, having the patience and kind of allowing someone to come into this space and learn about something they've never really done before. So I think support and patience is what's made this a lot easier for me as an actor.
To hear more,
go to studentradio.org.uk.